Everything I do is prayer. So when I'm creating, I'm deeply aware. And I was very aware of this as a child. As I look back, I don't know what to call this, but I understood transcendence, and I knew this flow that came through me as I created things. I couldn't account for experientially on my own, so I knew it wasn't mine. It was a gift that came through me, and everything I do, my life as a form of expression is an artwork of God.
You're listening to Restoring the Soul with Michael John Cusick. Welcome to the program. You're listening to Restoring the Soul. I'm Michael John Cusick. Today on the program and into the next episode, I'm speaking with Mako Fujimura, visual artist, author, thought leader, and cultural shaper, who was recently appointed director of the Brehm Center at Fuller Seminary. Mako's paintings have been exhibited around the world, and he's one of the first artists to paint live on stage at New York City's legendary Carnegie Hall. It wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that I could spend the next 10 minutes reading you Mako's credentials and accomplishments that are nothing if not impressive. However, to understand the man, his art, and his calling, I would want to tell you a story that I read in his book Culture Care, which is soon to be re-released by InterVarsity Press. Mako tells the story of he and his wife as young newlyweds, she in grad school, and he teaching special education by day and painting at night just to make ends meet. With the tight budget of graduate students, they often had to ration food just to get through the week. One evening, Mako was sitting alone in their apartment, waiting for his wife to come home, the whole time worrying that there was no food in the refrigerator, no money in the bank, and he didn't know how they were going to pay the rent. When his wife finally arrived home, she held a bouquet of flowers in her arms. Mako became frustrated, saying, "How could you think of buying flowers if we can't even eat?" Her simple reply was, "We need to feed our souls, too." Fujimura has written that those words have been etched in his heart for over 30 years. And in many ways, it's from the idea that we need to feed our souls too, that Mako has given himself to creating beauty through his own painting, and as a speaker and author and advocate of the arts, helping others to create beauty, even non-artists creating beauty, through what he calls generativity and culture care. Finally, Mako is the author of 3 books, which you'll want to dive into. They are a treasure chest of wisdom and grace: Culture Care, Refractions, and his new book, Silence and Beauty, which we discussed throughout the interview. So without any further delay, let's listen to my conversation with Mako Fujimura on Restoring the Soul. Mako, welcome to our program. Thanks for making time to speak with me today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. Your work is a Japanese art form that I understand goes back to medieval times. Can you explain what it is and how you chose that particular art form?
Yeah, Nihonga. Nihonga is Japanese style paintings that lineage goes back to 15th century, but you can trace it even back to as far as 8th century, but distinct Japanese way of painting, and that flowed out of China and Korea. But at the same time, the Japanese culture has refined many of these elements, had starting in, I would say, 15th century, began to really identify unique aspects of the expression using natural minerals, gold and silver and done on silk or paper. This is what I went to Japan to study as a graduate student. And I began to really understand the fantastic refinement and integration that Japanese culture had offered as early as 16th century. And so that journey continues. I'm trying to apply the principles of aesthetics in 17th, 16th century Japan into 21st century.
Today, your paintings
can be seen in galleries around the world and even in some public spaces. When did you first know that you actually wanted to be an artist?
I was always an artist and saw myself as an artist, but I didn't really know what that meant. I would say until maybe late in high school, in college, when I really began to determine what was most important to me and what I couldn't throw out of my life. I was very fortunate to have parents. My father is a research scientist, renowned acoustics pioneer.
I understand he worked with Noam Chomsky.
Yes, I was born in Boston because he was doing his postdoctorate with Noam Chomsky on generative grammar. So I grew up in that environment of scientists and artists. My father and both of my parents loved the arts. And my mother's side, there was a very significant artist in her family, and she would tell me about them. And so I was really encouraged to pursue the arts. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know if I could make a living at it. I had no idea what the future held, but I knew there was something important inside of me that I had to cultivate.
And in your book, River Grace, you talk about coming to faith.
Yes.
And art and beauty played a big role in that.
Yeah.
I love the phrase you use where I think you said something like, you were deeply immersed in beauty and transcendence through art, but your heart didn't have a shelf to place that beauty. Yeah. Will you say something more about that?
Yeah, I use that quote in my new book, Silence and Beauty, because it predicates everything that I say about Japanese culture and Endo and what the book is about, Japanese culture and silence and beauty. And my understanding of art, and I went to school in the 80s and 90s, which meant that beauty was out of the conversation. There was just the other day a New York Times feature about Chuck Close, one of the most important artists of our time. And he was saying, today, if you speak about craftsmanship, and along with that, I would say beauty, you feel like you're uttering a dirty word. And that was very much the philosophical backdrop to contemporary art, starting in the 80s and 90s. So beauty was very much out, and I had no place to put that, despite the fact that I had this enormous capacity to create beauty. My own hands were making things that I had no way to justify in my philosophical system. And so that was really an important part of my journey toward faith, and understanding that I really needed a new paradigm if I were to understand who I was and my desire to, and my response to what I saw in Japanese art, 17th century art, that is enormously beautiful and somewhat decorative in some cases. But that was the beginning of my journey. I part of the important steps in recovery of my faith.
And obviously your faith, which is a very central part of your life and your art, although in the art it's not visibly expressed like some Christians might think, we're a John 3:16 verse or something
right,
on there.
Yeah.
But you really integrate your faith into the books that you write. How did you go from being a visual artist to writing books?
Right. Well, everything I do is prayer. So when I'm creating, I'm deeply aware, and I was very aware of this as a child. As I look back, I don't know what to call this, but I understood transcendence, and I knew this flow that came through me as I created things, whether it be painting or writing or whatever I was doing, that I couldn't account for experientially on my own. So I knew it wasn't mine. It was a gift that came through me. And to me, everything I do, my life as a form of expression is an artwork of God, reshaping and sometimes hammering away, the unnecessary things. But the chisel is something that I have began to desire in my life, and so that writing flows out of my work as an artist. And when I am painting, I am tapped into this zone of experience that I treasure, and everything that I do, whether it be writing or speaking, or flows out of that experience.
The thing that I've enjoyed so much about your books, your new book, Silence and Beauty, which I want to talk about in a moment, your book, Culture Care, and particularly drawn to the essays in Refractions, is that it's one thing to see a person's artwork, but then to read what almost feels like exposition or commentary on your inner journey of creating, and then everything that comes out of your art as well. So your new book is called Silence and Beauty, Hidden Faith Born of Suffering, and it's a deep reflection on Shusaku Endo's book, Silence. And at the beginning of your book, Silence and Beauty, you pretty much say to the reader, if you haven't read Silence, put this book down now and read it. And you even include a summary at the end of your book for someone who doesn't want to read. But I read Silence, and the book just undid me. It is absolutely profound. Mm. What drew you to Silence, and how has Endo impacted you?
So when I started to write this book, I was asked by a friend of mine who became my agent, but he's the associate producer of the film Silence that Martin Scorsese is putting together, and he came to me. I got to know him through my Washington days as a National Council on the Arts member, and so he was in politics, and now he's trying to help culture. And he said, there's only one person who can write this book, and that's you. And I turned him down twice, and because I didn't want to revisit some of the traumas and painful journeys that I've been on, actually with Endo. And I felt like this would be too much. And so he kept on insisting, so I finally said yes. And as soon as I started to write, I realized that, you're unwinding this golden thread that William Blake talked about. You know, there's this just a sense of unraveling the mystery of your life. And, it became very clear to me that the reason why I found myself in Christ as a graduate student in Japan, of all places, going to temples and museums every day, and then encountering Fumie, stepping blocks of 17th century persecution. These were bronze images of Christ or Virgin Mary cast into bronze plates, and villagers were asked to line up by the beach and step on these images to renounce Christ. And many were tortured because they could not. And so I encountered Fumie of 17th century while studying these gorgeous, beautiful paintings of 17th century Limpa screens in museums. And they were side by side exhibited. And then, of course, I read in the description to Fumie that Shusaku Endo has written a novel about Silence.
You saw the Fumies as works of art prior to reading the book.
Yeah,
Silence.
Well, I didn't even know what to call it. It was such a profound experience. There were 19 plates at Tokyo National Museum lined up, and they were worn smooth, so many people had walked over them, 250 years of very aggressive persecution against Christians, Christians only. I didn't know much about this history. I knew I've heard about the persecution era, but it was not visceral until that moment. And then the exhibit connected Endo's book Silence, and I had read Silence as a undergrad. I remember reading Endo. He was a new author, a new Japanese author then, relatively new in America. But I remember reading him and not really getting to the depth of it because I had no faith perspective then. You know, I was just beginning my journey. And now, looking at Fumie, being really haunted by them and going back to Endo and rereading Silence both in Japanese and in English. And then it was a very traumatic experience for me because I was a brand new baptized believer and in Japan, you know, knowing that I had become a Christian in this land. And all of a sudden, this history of persecution has opened up to me, and the pain and torture and suffering. And I went into that the time, and what Endo describes so well is a remarkable testimony of the past. And it was not only haunting; it was I would say it was traumatic. And so I understand that when people don't read to the end of the book, you know, I really understand that reality, because it is hard. It is a hard book to finish. And yet, as I note in the book, Endo has set this up. So if you actually read to the end meaning the appendix, there are certain nuggets of truth, which turns out to be historical truth, that is very, very much encouraging.
And is it the case that some versions of Endo's Silence don't have the appendix in it?
I've heard that. No, it's not that it's not in there. It's just that it's segmented. William Johnson, when he translated it, he put the word appendix in between the last part and the end of the narrative. And in Japanese, there's no word separating the two. So that's an important thing to consider. There are several things about William Johnson's translation, which is very good translation, but there's just several things that I would do different.
So as you wrote Silence and Beauty, your most recent book, it's this very deep reflection on Endo, but it's also your own journey as well. What would you hope for the reader to gain through this interaction of your journey and Endo's novel?
Yeah, so when people read the manuscript of my book, they said, you know, what is this book about? It seems to be about Endo, but it's not, and well, it is, but it's more than that. And so I began to think of it as an autobiographical journey, spiritual journey, that happens to have Endo a significant part. And without Endo, I don't think I would have uncovered many of the things that I would have I uncovered while writing the book, that I wouldn't have seen it, even the personal narratives. Endo's book works like this. It kind of triggers through certain traumatic experience something about you that you have deeply put aside, and so it is a spiritual memoir, but it's also about Japan. It's about missions. It's about recalibrating or reforming how we view missions, what the Christians call the Great Commission, of fulfilling Christ's mandate to, you know, preach the gospel and baptize all nations. And that I discovered while I was writing this book so much about my hope and prayer for Japanese culture, kind of inverted into this thought that, Japan is the most integrated culture in terms of nature and culture, you know, what I call culture care. It happens in Japanese culture all the time. And the value of beauty, the value of silence, maybe something that unlocks the ultimately the mystery of the gospel, rather than here we are being frustrated that, you know, Japanese do not receive the gospel as Western churches would bring them. You know, and this is an important criticism that Endo makes in throughout his career, but particularly in Silence, that Western Christianity, the Christianity of imperialism and, you know, bringing Western culture with the Christian message has really made things difficult for Japanese to embrace the gospel. And that's bad for the Japanese, but that's also bad for us, because that means we don't fully understand the gospel in its fullest sense.
Say more about that. How don't we fully understand
it? So, you know, people think the gospel, quote unquote, is a set of information that we need to preach, we need to let people know, and that's certainly part of it. But when you think about what the gospel is, the good news, it's much more than that. It's a whole narrative of the chosen people, you know, starting from creation, being exiled and transgressing against, important order of being that we were asked to uphold, and we didn't. So our journey of exile and then the coming of Christ to fulfill the exodus journey into something of a, not only redemptive story, but it's also a new creation story. In Christ we are made new. And that whole narrative, the arc of the whole narrative, has not been what we hear when we go to churches or, you know, evangelistic meetings. We seem to truncate that. And sometimes for necessary reasons of letting people know about this historical reality. But what it assumes is that we fully know and understand this life of God or the gospel message. And that's a really, really dangerous assumption, because as we know, as journey into Christ spiritually, the more you know, the less we know. The more we seem to get to the heart of it, things, the more mysterious it becomes, and more you are basically confessing of not only your own failures to do the things that, you know, you ought to have done, but do the things that are left undone. And also the reality of God, who remains invisible, a mystery, and yet so profoundly together in this unified oneness of that holds everything together, and Christ as the creator, you know, Colossians passage about Christ being the creator. All of that is not something that we can grasp in a simple sentence or even in a series of lectures. It is a life force and life way of life that has to be lived through. And many times God calls us to traumatic realities, dark realities, to really begin to understand how we don't understand and we fail short. And yet this is what happens in the book Silence. I think it's a profound book about meditation of darkness. So I call it the Holy Saturday book. You know, there's Good Friday, there's Easter Sunday, but there's that middle Saturday that we don't talk about. And so many authors, Catholic writers, tend to dwell there, as well as people like T.S. Eliot. But.
And the darkness that you're referring to in Silence is not simply the horrific physical persecution and torture that you see, but it's the darkness of one's own failure and the darkness of one's own unfaithfulness, so that for these 16th and 17th century Portuguese missionaries, their whole goal became to not fail. And then when they were persecuted and they failed, then it was seen as a failure. And you actually write in Silence and Beauty, if I can just read this quote, "We have a tendency to extol heroes of faith. Our textbooks and our sermons are filled with the heroic. In doing so, we fall into a false dichotomy of seeing faith only in terms of victory and failure, which leads us to dismiss and discard the weak. Endo stands with those sitting in the pews who feel inadequate and uncertain, who doubt whether they can be strong, heroic, and faith-filled." So it's this idea that that's what the gospel is for, but we so easily miss the point. How do the arts, which you're deeply involved in, how do the arts help us to not miss the point?
Yeah, and this is one of the discoveries I made while writing this book, that the arts are fundamentally about that, the journey of brokenness and realizing the honest, authentic experience. You know, we fall short all the time, and you know, we market things as this triumphant way of success, you know, American success perhaps, and those are easier to market, because you can, you know, reduce the message into a very much a package, and the rest of us who, you know, fall by the sideways, and we don't quite live up to that expectation of perfection and material success and even beauty, being able to capture or express beauty. You know, we're in this constant mode of depression, because the world and this culture in particular has certain expectations that we can't meet. And for those of us, you know, that story, now this is what artists, true artists, instinctively are drawn to. Like Endo, they would much rather hear the story of the homeless or the immigrants or, you know, people who do not have a voice. And they consider these things very deeply and have a way of capturing that through words or by writing about them, by painting, by creating, you know, movies out of them. And so it actually brings empathy into this raw incarnational reality. And this is what art can do that perhaps very few mediums can attain.
You've been listening to another episode of Restoring the Soul. Learn more about how we cultivate freedom and wholeness of heart at restoringthesoul.com.